Okay, you may or may not be aware that we are backing the Donegal Camino, which takes place next month, and is raising funds for Cancer Care West in Letterkenny. And listen, we're not climbing Seven Peaks or nothing. We're taking part in one of the day's walks, but it's about raising money and raising awareness. And we'd really love your support so that we can hand over to Cancer Care West Letterkenny a decent sum, so to speak. If you want to, go to our website. Go to this URL. If you can donate anything, I would greatly appreciate it. It's idonate.ie/ Greg Hughes, and we'll tell you more about that. We're going to have fun on the day as well as everything else. Right, now we are going to be talking about Acres Donegal. Aileen Collery is a project officer. Trish Murphy, program specialist at Acres Donegal. Good morning, Aileen, to you first. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having us.
Right. You're announcing details of an upcoming event on women in agriculture. So what's this about? If you could just move slightly behind that microphone.
Yeah.
Thank you so very much.
Yes, it's Year One, and it's Understanding Rural Women in Agricultural Needs. And we are running two events, one in the north of Donegal and one in the south of Donegal, purely just to cover, you know, the whole area. So the north one is in Churchill and the south one is in Legony Hall. Mm. And what we aim to do is just allow women to have a voice so that they have somewhere to come to, somewhere to talk and communicate with other women in agriculture, particularly our Acres participants, but all women in farming. We know that the 2020 census says that 13%, only 13% of farm holders are women.
Can that grow?
Across. It can grow. I think it actually can grow greatly now, and I think there's never been a better opportunity for women in agriculture because historically, I suppose, you know, we would have looked at barriers like physical, you know, just the physical aspect of farming. But that really has been taken out of farming now through improvements in machinery, AI and all the technologies that are available now. I think women are really improving and looking towards agriculture. I know from ATU and UCD and any of the ag science courses, I know veterinary science even, a lot of their students now are up to 60% are female.
Because it is getting technical.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, the education, bringing that to the whole scene is really important.
Yeah.
Trish, it'd be interesting to know if the 13%, we might not know, are sort of in it by choice or sort of almost accidental farm holders?
I suppose, you know, we don't know a huge amount about women in agriculture in Ireland, and there's a lot of projects coming up now. You know, they've been announced earlier this year. There's a new EIP funding announced for gender balance in farming, and there's a lot of support from the EU on this and CAP, and they really want to push, you know, more research on women in agriculture, that they can understand it better. The Department of Agriculture announced a national Women in Action, Women in Agriculture Action Plan, and they had a 12-point plan. And within that, they've included that they want to do research. They've included that they want to have a designated part of their website.
Yeah, we really should understand it better, shouldn't we?
Yes, absolutely.
The makeup of that 13%. Mm-hmm. So talk to us about Year One, URWAN, Understanding Rural Women and Agricultural Needs. Just to mention, there's two events. One on August 20th at Roisin Churchill in Letterkenny. The second on August 21st in Legony Hall, just outside Donegal Town, on this side, the Letterkenny side of Donegal Town, but close to Donegal Town. So what's going to happen on the days? I don't know, Trish or Aileen, who wants to take that?
Yeah,
Aileen Collery?
Yeah, we're going to have a panel discussion. I really wanted to design it so that it was very organic and allow people to feel comfortable. I didn't want the day to be organised where just the audience came in, sat down, listened, too prescriptive. So I wanted people to get involved and to participate themselves in it. There's a panel discussion that's been chaired by Gerard McDade from ATU. And we have Henry O'Donnell, who's our leader at Acres. We have Maureen Kilgore, and she's from the Irish Agroforestry Forum. We have Joanne Butler, who's an organic grower, and we have Catherine Keena from Chagas.
No, big hitters there.
Yes. And we've had a huge uptake. You know, I didn't have to chase these people to turn up to this. They wanted to come straight away.
They want to be part of maybe a change.
They want to be part of a change, which is very exciting. We also have stalls. So this is kind of, I wanted the panel to set the scene for the day, just drum up discussion, allow the audience, allow the women in the audience to have their say, whether they're older women or whether they're new entrants, whether they're students at the college, to have their say. And then we have demonstrations and displays where we have Louise Price for dry stone walling, and we have Hedgerows Ireland, two ladies from there. We also have a biodiversity stand. Catherine, again, from Chagas is going to do that. Trish is going to do our water quality stand. And we have birds on the farm and an acres dedicated.
Yeah, and it is, you know, this will perhaps get people's, you know, juices flowing, Trish, in terms of where they might go in farming and what have you. And often, you know, if you see it, you can be it. Do you know what I mean? We're probably talking about maybe some areas, not all, that perhaps would be seen as male roles or male-dominated roles, but you're presenting, you know, there's a mixture of genders there, but you are presenting women who are doing it.
Yeah, so those women that are coming to this would be great role models. And we also want it to be very much a networking event.
Yeah,
about the women meeting each other and sharing their experiences.
Because it has to be a feeling of isolation to some extent, because they are women farmers or farm holders are few and far between. So how well are they sort of networking?
Yeah.
Sorry, Trish. Yeah, there are. I mean, there are networks. It is a growing area, and there are networks in place at the moment. Like you have national rural networks, and you have gender balance in farming. That, you know, there is funding there available for that. Again, the EU CAP is starting to support this. But we also wanted to reach out and say that we're supporting this as well, because we are aware of that isolation, and it doesn't always come to the fore. Because I suppose, you know, historically what happened was the herd number went into the male's name. Quite recently I spoke to a lady who said that, you know, when she was getting married, she brought a farm of land to the marriage table, for want of a better description.
The reality is that farmers traditionally like to keep the farm in their own surname.
That's it.
And you divvy it up or give it to your daughter. Next thing, it's not a Hughes farm, it's a McGonagall farm or something. And I think that's probably one of the barriers we have here, isn't it?
Yeah, but it is very exciting because, you know, we have talked to male farmers about this.
Yes.
And we've talked to fathers of daughters and who are very excited about handing their farm to the daughters.
And there's a big conversation too about inheritance and accession and all that kind of stuff. So I think in a way it all kind of ties into where we're at the moment.
It does all tie in. Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of work to do on that, really. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this action plan now from the Department of Agriculture is going to look at that kind of thing about the, you know, including women onto the herd numbers.
Yeah.
Succession, taxation, finances, because sometimes the women, you know, there are barriers to them getting the finance. So it's all about kind of improving policy around that as well.
And I think too, Trish, staying with you just on this one, I think, you know, as you say, to some extent we're exploring and learning, and I think this is going to be actually really quite useful to sort of, and it's been set up like that, as you mentioned, Aileen, is to sort of what's coming back from the floor, so to speak, you know, and
absolutely. That is the most important thing. It's the engagement and it's getting the feedback. And it's us taking, you know, that feedback and building now upon this. You know, we can collaborate with DAFM on these areas. We can collaborate with other research projects within this area. So, but we need the women to come along, have their say, to, you know, talk about their concerns, talk about their issues, you know, what are the barriers for them
on a
daily basis.
Yeah, because we sometimes things are happening and people make decisions. Who are they? You know, we need to take control of lots of things as well. So in terms of signing up, so August 20th, Rushing Churchill, Letterkenny, August 21st, Legony Hall, just outside Donegal Town. Like, who are you inviting, Aileen? Because I presume as well, too, you want people to get the maximum benefit from it.
We do. And we're inviting both male and female. There's absolutely, it's not just, although it's focused on women and it's focused on women in agriculture, and it's focused again on our acres women. We want anybody who's involved in agriculture in Donegal to come along on the day. We're happy to, they can sign up on Eventbrite or they can go to our website and sign up that way.
So go to acresdonegal.ie/upcoming-events. You don't have to type all that in. You'll see the clickable link there. Or you can go on to Eventbrite and search Understanding Rural Women and Agricultural Needs. At some point it'll autofill, I hope.
Yeah, indeed.
Trish, anything you want to add finally? Just as a word of encouragement, maybe, to get someone out? Like, I know it's open to men and women. I think it'd be nice maybe if there was more women there than men, because it would sort of talk to an interest, you know, from actual women themselves trying to, I suppose, empower themselves and even direct where we're going.
Yeah. Well, you know, I would think, you know, some of the workshops and the demonstrations are going to be really exciting.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, personally, I love the stone wall building and the hedge
lane. I'm fascinated by
you know, they're brilliant, and they have traditionally been very male orientated activities. You know, the men do those jobs, but these women I've been doing this, and you know, it will be great to demonstrate that and to show that it's possible for all the women to learn these skills.
And ironically, you know, I spoke to those ladies, say Louise Price, who's doing the dry stone walling, and she was saying, you know, that most of her clients are female. And it's the same with the Hedgerows Ireland, that they run their courses, and they said again that 60-65% of their clients are female again.
Yeah. And in terms of sustainability, you know, where we're going with farming, be it biodiversity or water quality, and then obviously harping back to the traditional stuff, that's still very important as well. You know, I think it captures where the you know, agriculture is going as well, with a focus on women. Okay, so thanks both of you. I know you've other appointments. Aileen Collery, Project Officer, and Trish Murphy, Program Specialist at Acres Donegal. If you are interested in taking part in either of these events, the first is between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. on the 20th of August, and it's in Roisin, Churchill, County Donegal, of course, or the second on the 21st of August between the same hours, 10 and 4, at Leganey Community Hall. And you can book by going on to acresdonegal.ie, click on upcoming events, or search for that event title in eventbrite.com. Hopefully, you have a huge turnout. And I don't see why not, because it sounds like it's going to be an interesting mix of information and demonstration. And
thank you very much. We're looking forward to meeting all our ladies and gentlemen on the day.
All right, bye-bye. And then on to an interesting subject here with our guest, Professor Mark Lawler, who is a Professor of Digital Health at Queen's University Belfast and lead researcher. Thank you so much for your time, Professor. I do appreciate it greatly.
Thanks very much, Greg. Great to be on the show.
Right. So there are calls for cancer survivors to have the right for their illness to be forgotten when they are told that they've been given the all clear, or whatever a terminology their consultant chooses to use. And I'm sure there's people listening here that this will resonate with. So what is the problem when you aren't forgotten, I suppose, Mark?
Yeah, Greg. Well, imagine the scenario. You've been diagnosed with cancer. You go through treatment, it's very tough, but you beat cancer. So you've come out the other end 5 years after your diagnosis, you're now cured of your disease. You then go to apply for a mortgage or health insurance or travel insurance, and you find that you can't do it, you can't get a quote, it's more expensive, the premiums are up. And what we're saying is, you know, this does not make any sense. This is discrimination against cancer survivors, because you're now disease-free. So you shouldn't have to have declared the fact that you were once diagnosed with cancer, and that it would have a negative impact in relation to access to financial products. So we've started this campaign about 8 years ago, and looking to, and it's already in place in 8 countries in Europe, and we're now looking to have it in place in the United Kingdom and in the Republic of Ireland. So we're working very closely on that. So we just published a big paper on this yesterday in The Lancet Oncology, which is probably the premier cancer journal in the world, highlighting this the disparity that we're seeing, discrimination against cancer survivors. It's simply not fair. And you've beaten cancer, and yet you still find that, you know, you're being penalised because you once had a cancer diagnosis.
Yeah, which must be devastating. But all the lenders, the likes of, you know, those giving out loans and mortgages or insurance providers, I presume their argument is that, you know, it's based on risk.
Yeah, but I mean, who do you believe, okay? The oncologist who says to you after 5 years you're cancer-free, or a financial institution that says you're not. So
the oncologist,
you know, it's a very straightforward question. So you know, one of the things we've been doing is we've been looking and saying, you know, this is really not about compassion. This is about evidence. So this is about the evidence that we have that shows that you are disease-free after 5 years and your disease is not coming back. So therefore, you shouldn't have to have a inflated insurance premium or inability to get travel insurance. You know, this is really not acceptable. And so that's really where the campaign came from. Providing that evidence base, and that's the paper we published yesterday, highlighting this is a significant issue. And the problem is, I don't think a lot of people realize this was a significant issue. Certainly, the feedback I got yesterday that we were on a lot of the different news channels, etc., and we had a lot of people coming in and saying we never knew this existed.
I think it's because people are sharing. Yeah, I think it's because people are dealing with this in their millions individually. Yeah. And maybe the realization that there are so many people in the same situation, and is it through like obligatory declaration that they find out about people who have had cancer? In other words, there might be a question in a form, like there's not a database that has this information, or is there?
Yeah, no, it would be that have you ever had a cancer diagnosis? Yeah. And obviously, then if you haven't had a cancer diagnosis, you have to answer yes. So it's looking. So that's why we call it the right to be forgotten. So it's the right for your diagnosis to be forgotten.
Yes.
And now that you've gone through the process, you've been treated, you're cured of the disease.
So the question might be, have you been cancer free for 5 years?
Yeah, and that's what we're pushing for, that five-year limit, because that's what international best practice is identifies that as being, that's what we talk about, five-year cancer survival. That's in the community, and it's looking at putting this into the law. So we really need it as part of the law. There is a code of conduct in the Republic of Ireland, but a code of conduct is voluntary, so it's not legally binding. And what's really critical here is you need something that's legally binding. I'm not saying the code of conduct is certainly a step in the right direction, and I'm delighted that Ireland did go that way, but that's only part of the way. And also it's 7 years. So the code of conduct talks about a 7-year, so it's after 7 years that they'll, look at forgetting your cancer diagnosis.
Yeah.
And so we want that brought back to 5. I've campaigned in Brussels for this, and we've had some quite hard, sort of pushback from the industry, and are talking about 10 years or 15 years. That's simply not acceptable either to cancer patients
or to
cancer professionals.
That's ridiculous and goes beyond the professional medical opinion. You say, where are we taking our medical advice from? So how would this come to be in Ireland, for an example? I don't think we certainly can't rely on embarrassing these organisations to do the right thing.
No, it just has to come into law. So we've presented before the cross-party group on cancer. So that's a group that represents different political parties. They were very receptive to it. We're looking for a meeting with the minister in September. And we've been lobbying, obviously, very critically for this, working very closely with the Irish Cancer Society. On the broader sort of UK aspect, we've been working with Cancer Focus Northern Ireland, and we're looking at developing a campaign in the UK as well. So it's really getting that out there, that knowledge out there, that evidence that we have showing that this is actually happening, and it's happening in a significant number of cases, and really pushing for that legal aspect to be addressed so that by law it's actually enshrined in the legal system.
And did I hear you correctly? You said 8 countries already have taken this step.
So
what
France
does it
was
look
the first
like
one
in,
back in 2016?
Yeah. Okay, and what does it look like in France, for an example?
France started off with 7 years, then went back to 5 years. They now have 8 years experience of doing this, and no insurance company has gone out of business. So it's not as if it's had an impact on the insurance industry. France has led the way in this. Belgium at the moment is at 8 years, but it's going back to 5 years in February of next year. Cyprus, Italy, Spain, Portugal, so a number of different countries, and from different parts of Europe as well. Romania, for example, from Eastern Europe.
Yeah, just one example from a listener. I had cancer in 2017. I was told at the time that 80% of the male population may have the same cancer at one time or other. But anyway, we're now in 2024 and I still cannot get insurance cover either for health or for life. but I have been cancer-free for all of those years.
That's exactly what we're talking about. So that's disgraceful. If you, if the person has come in, if they want to contact us, because we want to collect more information on you know, how widespread it is. Yeah. So certainly happy for you to give my contact details to them.
No problem. We shall. Okay. And as I knew as we started talking that people, it would hit with some people who may thought that it's just them and they're having bad luck or
something. That's the other important thing. Yeah. You know, you're right. You know, people may feel, and not realise that actually this is happening to a lot of people, and it's, you know, there's strength in numbers as well in terms of working together to try and get this embedded into national law.
Okay, thanks for your time. I appreciate it. Take care of yourself. Professor Mark Lawler there, Professor of Digital Health at Queen's University Belfast and lead researcher as well. So can you imagine? You got this gentleman here, got cancer in 2017, has been cancer-free for ages. But in 2024 and not far from 2025, this person still cannot get insurance cover either for health or for life, which is, I mean, firstly, you know, if it was something you were worried about, that causes its anxiety. But also, too, you know, if you're thinking about your loved ones and, you know, maybe life insurance in that regard, but you can't get it. This person can't be on their own. Anyone else out there with this experience, please let us know, because as the professor said there, there is strength in numbers. And if you also want to let us know the situation, but also access Professor Mark Lawler's contact details, he's given us the okay to do that. 08660 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number. Right, now, some of your comments here. Greg, don't listen to that crap. There is no children going back to school without clothes or food. I work in a charity shop and we have loads of uniforms, a lot of brand new, and parents don't want them as they get grants. Some may buy and then spend the grant money on holidays. This is nonsense and makes the charity sound good. It's the same at First Communion time. They all claim they haven't money but want the most expensive outfit, which I think is quite it's a hard-hitting statement there from someone actually working in a charity shop. I was going to say let us know so we can direct people towards those uniforms, because we're not making this up. We had three guests on earlier who are part of a collective of 21 right across the country or right across this county, and they know the people in their areas and who's coming forward. It's all anonymous and what have you, but they're not speaking at the top of their head. They know these are professional people, and the cases they see have moved them such that they believe it's important to try and get the message out there. In relation to vets, yes, I agree. Vet fees are far too high. It could lead to animals being neglected. Probably is going on anyway. Thanks. Keep up the good work. Thank you. You should not read Charlie McConnell's press releases. He should have to say it himself or give him no say at all with his choice not to participate with you on your programme. It's just not my style, to be honest. I really have no idea what any of all of that is about, if the truth be told. But I prefer to be as fair as I possibly can be. But I understand where you're coming from, but it's not about me. I think it's important that people get to hear it. Can they explain the purpose to lowering a car to more or less trail on the road? It's just a fashion thing. Is it just a fashion thing? I mean, yeah. I mean, there might be some handling benefits if it's done correctly, maybe more grip. I don't know, really, to be honest with you. But the car looks cooler. You know, drop it is what they do. Drop it to the floor and the car looks cooler. And you fill the wheel arches, and it's 99% visual, I would imagine. Well done, Les and Dennis. Les Dennis. Well done, Leslie and Dennis. What a brilliant job you're both doing for the youth. Delighted to hear the girls are also included, from it coming in from Mary. They're two fantastic lads, they are. They really are, and do amazing, amazing things. Right. Let me see. I'll get back to some comments here. There's a lot of flooding in the Lifford Castle Finn area at the moment, is there? Okay. Let us know more as to what's going on there. Another, I think that putting the veterinary school in Letterkenny will be a great asset. My late husband and his father were both vets who had to travel up to Dublin and stay in digs to train. Yeah, we don't want that, do we? We want to try and avoid that. A listener wants to know when hedges can be cut again, as this picture shows sometimes hedges can impact visibility and road safety. Should hedges be allowed to be cut in instances of safety? I'm not quite sure. I have seen some hedge cutting going on, and it's astonishing. There's one particular corner of a road where it's really popular with walkers, and you can't see the person. You come around the corner and someone's standing in the hedge, you know, leaning back with their dog on the lead. The hedge was cut yesterday, and it must have taken eight. It must have widened the road by 7 or 8 feet. It's remarkable. And it was just grass. There was no actual hedge. It was just grass. And now these the lines of sight are back, and it's fantastic. I don't know what the story is in terms of whether or not you can or cannot cut hedges at this time. I'm not cutting hedges. But there you go. Right, OK, back with more after these. Now, a caller says, I'm right to tell you of the case of my elderly unwell uncle. He's 92 years old and has been in the care of St. Joseph's Hospital, Stranorla, since November. As you know, following a recent HICWA inspection, the number of beds needed to be decreased to facilitate the work. My uncle was granted long-term care on Monday the 12th of August, just 4 days ago, and we've just now been told that because of the decrease in bed numbers, he will be moved. The best case scenario is we will get a bed in Convoy or Letterkenny, although it is possible he'll be placed much further away from home. He never married nor had children. I've cared for him until he became too unwell to stay at home. I live in Ballybuffet and I've visited him every day. He's in very poor condition. He's become much more frail in recent weeks. Moving him in this state, confused, sick and in pain, is unfair. He is fourth on the list to receive a bed, so our worry is that it could simply take too much of a toll on his body. I would like to stress that the staff have been wonderful, and this is a case of clear mismanagement by the HSC. Our older people need better care. People like him. I hope you can elevate this to keep my uncle in what has become his home and comfort. And that also was not just sent to us, but sent to a number of public representatives. And it lays bare to the reality that these decisions have on people. Right. So hopefully there's a resolution to that sooner rather than later. I want to mention that the 13 times All-Ireland Darts champions are climbing Mount Errigal on Saturday at 11 a.m. It's all to raise funds for Donegal Hospice. They will also be showing off their dart skills with a game of darts at the top of Errigal with refreshments afterwards in Chac Bilye, Gortahawk. The event's open to everyone to join in. The All-Ireland Trophy will also be going to the top of the mountain. If you would like to donate, you can contact the Donegal Darts page on Facebook or any Donegal Darts County player. Is this going to be, I wonder, the highest game of darts ever played in Ireland? It would be interesting. I can't imagine there's been a game of darts higher than on the top of Mount Errigal, which is really quite interesting. All right, okay, we shall see. Well done to that. Enjoy the climb. I think the weather's going to be middling for you. And you can support them there as well. Right, okay. I'll come back to that comment because I'm not really quite sure what it's all about. We were talking to a senator at the end of the programme yesterday who was suggesting that derelict properties in towns could be used to house pop-up Garda stations. And to me, look, I feel we're fixing a problem. We've closed down a lot of our Garda stations. They're unattended. And now we're talking about pop-up Garda stations. But anyway, this caller believes that derelict buildings should be better used for homeless, never mind Garda stations. Now, an email who believes that the whole summer has been manipulated. I'll just read what they have to say. A lot of people subscribe to this point of view, to be honest with you. But this caller says, emailer says, we are sick of geoengineering. A whole summer has been manipulated by geoengineering projects funded by the government in order to return the earth back to a stable CO2 level. This is absolutely absurd. The government needs polled. We need to discuss this daily dimming of our sun and the impacts on food, mental and physical health. So that's a listener who earnestly believes that we've had a bad summer here in the Northwest and elsewhere because the government is funding, this government is funding geoengineering projects to make the weather crap, effectively, and to bring COT to levels down. It would be a remarkable achievement if they were doing that. Good morning, Greg. I was in Swan Park last Tuesday night with my two little nieces walking a few dogs, not on a lead. After a while, I came running after 5-year-old who was so scared, crying, ended up making her sick. Please ask people to keep dogs on leads, like the signs say. I won't be going to Swan Park again after this. So this is a listener that was out with two little nieces walking. They were walking, but there was a few dogs there not on their leads who came running up to the 5-year-old who was scared and crying. It made her sick. She was so afraid. They had to go home and won't be using Swan Park again. So they're saying, please, if you're using Swan Park, put your dog on a lead because not everyone loves your dog like you do. And people, a lot of people are genuinely scared. We were talking to Billy Bustard yesterday. He is a big fundraiser for the Cancer Buzz. which really fills a gap that's not there provided by the state. And he's raised hundreds of thousands of euro over the years. Last weekend, he was approached, or the weekend before he was approached, he has a wee white van on the Diamond in Donegal Town where he sells tickets and what have you, raising funds for the cancer bus. And he was told, listen, Billy, get off the Diamond. And then the next weekend, he actually got a ticket for it. And he's holding a protest on the Diamond on Saturday and he's asking people who back him to turn up at that. But this caller says this bus is a vital service for the public, providing a service that our government, in fact, should be providing. We also had a listener speaking about family life. Elaine, I think it was. Elaine, a few people backing you up on that. That was just after 11 yesterday. Greg, boy oh boy, would I be in favour of and support pharmacists having more authority over prescribing medication for pre-prescriptions and ones for minor health issues that are not for serious or life-threatening conditions, especially after the scenario I had that lasted from Friday afternoon until Tuesday at 4 p.m. and still only half my products were sent to the pharmacy. It took 7 phone calls and a huge thanks to the pharmacist in Glencar Pharmacy for sorting it all out for me by 4 p.m. on Tuesday. Otherwise, I'd still not have my 4 products, none of them for serious health issues, but necessary to alleviate pain. And I hope they are working for you. So that's someone in favour of pharmacists having more power. Greg, with regard to the Diamond in Donegal Town, it's time the public had a say in these renovations in our towns with all the money that's being squandered. I'm not sure it's being squandered, but I take your point. For all the money that's being squandered on these towns, including Letterkenny and Milford, it's only destroying the town and keeping people away. If you take Letterkenny, if a bus or lorry broke down between what used to be Gallagher's Hotel and Church Lane, there's no way for traffic to be cleared if that vehicle went on fire. No thought went into the escape routes or emergency vehicles or how they'd get near it. I mean, there are a couple of wee routes down there, are they? But I take your wider point. And let's not forget, there's big moves on, and the public should be consulted more. There's big moves on in Letterkenny, for an example, to make the town square there more, I don't know, for the people or of the people. The work was done previously, and it's beautiful, right? But we kind of lost the use of the... that square. Donegal Town, ongoing controversy there. A caller says, I think it's very unfair if people don't pay for a meal. This is another issue we had yesterday, and I'm catching up on them now. There's a young girl working in a restaurant. There was a group of lads come in, ate, had drink, but they slipped off without paying. The person was on a day off. Their boss called them and says, by the way, you're going to have to pay for this check, and I'm going to take it out of your wages over subsequent weeks. And the listener wanted to know, do you think that's fair? But this caller says, I think it's very unfair. If people don't pay for the meal, the poor waitress has to pay for it. Bad form. They should have a bouncer to ensure they pay. Also, too, are they going to be asked to pay the retail cost of it or sort of the cost of actually creating it? Greg, people are asking the car manufacturers to put in measures to prevent drink driving. What about self-control and being responsible as an adult? People want babysitting nowadays. Well, we've tried the education, we've tried the pleading, we've tried the will you, and I think really what happens is you get desperate and you introduce laws or measures. Here we go on this issue again regarding the young person being charged because people walked out without paying. That's totally illegal. She was probably in the other side of the room when it happened. I have no words. That's for the scum that did it, i.e. that's what they call the people that... maybe whoever is responsible is listening and they didn't realise. You don't want that young person picking up your bill, do they? Back to the pharmacy. Will the pharmacy be allowed to give the items for these illnesses for free with the medical card? If you go to the doctor, it's free with the medical card, so we need no cost when going through the pharmacist. And I asked Tom Murray that question, and the answer is yes, it would be free through a medical card. But there's no one in there, Caroline, or else I wouldn't be rattling on for the last 15 minutes. Love you too. a caller says the only people to blame for the housing crisis are the sitting councillors. In 1908, they built over 7,000 houses. Oh, I read that one yesterday. Now, I'm joined on the programme by Zoe McSparron. Good morning to you, Zoe.
Hey, Greg. Thanks so much for having me this morning. I appreciate it.
Not at all. It's lovely to have you on. Right, what are the Fuse Arts, or what is the Fuse Arts?
So Fuse Arts is a new arts organisation based in the Waterside area of Derry. It's set up by myself and my colleague Aoife Boyle. So we both were employees of the Waterside Theatre and Arts Centre, which recently closed its doors at the end of June. So just at that point, we were both sitting down and going, we've done so much work here. There's so much need for an arts organisation in the Waterside. Let's not stop now. So we have been working on setting up a new organisation ever since then, and been able to translate some of the work that has been done at the Waterside Theatre over the many years now into a new initiative. So yeah, we're a community led producing and commissioning company. We really want to understand the needs of the community and how we can then feed that into different arts projects. So for example, we might come into schools or community groups and be able to work with that community to devise an arts project around a theme that might suit them. We can also facilitate different arts accreditation programs and also devise lots of other programs around the arts in collaboration with various other organisations across the island of Ireland as well. So a wee bit of everything, to be honest.
Yeah, sounds great. How long have you and Aoife been working on this then?
So we got the news that the Waterside Theatre had sadly lost its funding back in April. So it's something we've been exploring ever since then.
But you've done an awful lot in a short period of time then.
Yeah, it's been all go, non-stop.
Yeah, for sure. And received a funding announcement as well.
We did, yeah. We were absolutely delighted. This was a funding application we'd actually put in while we were at the Waterside Theatre. So we are really, really grateful for the Waterside Neighbourhood Partnership. We have been able to translate that project over. Basically, everything about the project is staying the same, but it's just the overarching leadership on the project which has changed. But yeah, we're absolutely delighted to receive the Creative Youth in a Shared Island money. So to do To the Power of Three project. So that is a collaboration between ourselves, Tala Community Arts in Dublin, and Creative Places in Enniscorthy. So,
Anna, did you create the connection to those two other organisations ahead of the funding application?
Yes, so we did.
How did that come about? Tell us a bit more about that then.
So we all had a mutual contact in Dublin County Council. So they are South Dublin County Council. So they have been a great support throughout the initiation of the project. We kind of got together and we seen similarities in the ways we were working and the ways we were working with young people particularly. So from that point, we started to do a lot of research that was ongoing anyway in the organisations, because we do all work quite similarly. But we looked into, we set up different focus groups with young people in the three respective cities, and really got to know them and got to understand what their idea of what a shared island is and what it means to be a young person on the shared island.
I find that quite complex to get my head around, you know, and I know you're sort of in the heart of it and you get it right. So really my question is, like, what's the output? So how do you see you working, say, for instance, with children in this area? You know, what's the product of that? What's the output?
Yeah, so it's a project that's really, really led by the young people. It's something that the young people's voice is at the heart of at all times. But in terms of the actual structure of the project itself, it's going to consist of a series of creative exchanges. Mm. So we're going to be going to, we'll have young people from Dublin and Enniscorthy up here in Derry and around the northwest. We will then be going to Dublin and we'll be going to Wexford as well. So what we'll be doing is different multimedia arts workshops with the three respective groups, and then also when the groups come together. So there'll be elements of that happening on Zoom from whenever you're not able to be in the room all together, but also whenever the groups come together in person as well. Each city or location will host those other young people, but and program an activity program which it emphasises what their place means to them and how you can explore that through the arts. So we recently, this is a continuation of a project that we had done through the Cruin Éireann Óg. So as part of that project, we were working particularly just with the Dublin, South Dublin young people and the young people in Derry. And we had done a series of exchanges. So they had made little time capsules and sent them to the respective cities to introduce the other city to the other group. And then we had the Dublin young people up in Derry as well, where the young people gave a bespoke tour of Derry. So what Derry actually means to them, that it's more than just the tourism side of things, but it was actually looking at, okay, that's where I lived, or that's where my friend lives, or this is what we do here, or this is somewhere we want to go. So it's really giving those young people a voice, but through performative methods, to really share their culture and their place with other young people. So yeah, it's going to be a series of exchanges. So that'll be a series of residentials. And then we are hoping for it to accumulate then in an all-island creative youth festival somewhere along the border. That's something we're hoping we'll be able to continue on a yearly basis as a legacy of this project. But the whole idea is that that's led by the young people. So there's an arts leadership element there to it, that they're really directing where this project goes. And that's also feeding into the idea of the whole structure of the project, that we are preparing young people for the future. So they are taking on those arts leadership skills. They're learning those more like skill-based skills within the art forms as well, so that they're able to go off after this project and potentially become art leaders themselves, or arts facilitators, or artists and creatives, potentially making their own complete performances.
All right, great stuff. All right, best of luck. As I say, a lot of work been done since April, and a lot to do going forward. If people want to find out more about the Fuse Arts organisation, is there a website or a social media page? Or
we don't currently have a website, but you can find out more on our socials. So our Instagram is Fuse Arts NI, and our Facebook is Fuse Arts. We will be doing a call out for young people, and that's something we will be like, would love for young people in Donegal to also be a part of. We'll be doing a call out for young people to take part in our Fuse Youth programme, which will also feed into this wider programme. So do keep an eye out for that on our socials.
Brilliant. All right. Thank you very much indeed. That was Zoe McSparren there, who is one of two, along with Aoife Boyle, who created the Fuse Arts. It's a community-led arts organisation in Derry, and they saw a sort of a gap in the market, so to speak, within the youth demographic following the closure of the Waterside Theatre. And they've, as I say, in short shrift, have created that. Okay, so we have our competition, of course, running in association with Heritage Week, which is upcoming. We have two family passes to give away. You can go to all OPW sites across Donegal, across the country, as often as you like during the window of their validity. The answer to today's riddle was Donegal Castle, and fair play to Conal McEnra. McGrenra in Carndonagh. You have won one of those. We'll be in touch if we haven't already been so. And also Audrey Sterrett in Dunfanaghy in County Donegal correctly answered that the answer was Donegal Castle. Well done to both of you. I think we have a final two to give away on the show tomorrow, so stay tuned for that. Right, okay, just some comments as we head towards the end of the programme. Can you find out, please, if an under 18-year-old can be accompanied by an adult to the Wolf Tones on Saturday in Letterkenny? I can't seem to find any information, just 18-plus event, thank you. A toughie, I don't know the answer to that question, but we'll find it out and pass it on to you, don't worry about that. Coffee and Scones fundraising afternoon in aid of Bumbleance, that's the sick children's charity. It'll be held in the home of Breed and Walter Gibbons, Capri, Ballybuffet, their air code F93EEW8. It's on Sunday, and it's between 12 p.m. and 6 p.m. All welcome to support this worthy cause. That comes in from Breed. Well done. Yes, you can cut hedges if there is safety concerns, but a farmer must get clearance from Donegal County Council first. Thanks very much for that prompt reply. This sort of collective brain, the fantastic brain that we have around the northwest and beyond here. Right, okay, I just want to give you one more mention of this because it is running tomorrow and for every Friday for the next month. We have €2,500 to give away in the show tomorrow. It's part of our €20,000 cash giveaway. And the reason I'm mentioning it again, it's the final reminder for me that if you want to be in all five draws, you need to get your ticket today. You need to get it before the first draw tomorrow. You still have a great chance thereafter, but this is the early bird option, effectively. If you want to be in with a chance to win $2,500 tomorrow, the following Friday, the following Friday, the following Friday, and then $10,000 on that following last Friday, which is the, is it the 6th of September? Get your tickets now. You can go onto our website, highlandradio.com. You can get one ticket for a tenner, which is fine. You can get 6 for £50 if that suits you or your family, or 10 for £80 if you want to group together and get 2 free tickets. Why not? All the tickets of equal value in the end. They all go into the draw drum. And as I said on the show a couple of days ago, you know, there are fantastic competitions on social media that have massive entry into them. And they're fantastic, as I say. This is one of those that is kind of ours, right? It's for our listeners, our little collective here in the Northwest. And the chance of you winning, obviously, then with less entries is greater. So, $2,500 tomorrow, $2,500 the final, the next Friday, and then $2,500 and $10,000 on the 6th of September. So if you want to be in all five draws, go onto our website, highlandradio.com, click on Mega Summer Draw, answer a simple question, then choose what tickets you want. It couldn't be simpler, and it's incredibly secure, by the way. But if you want to speak to a human person, we have a couple that almost qualify that can answer your phone call on 07491 25000, 07491 25000. We can process your entry that way whatsoever. Right, so the Wolf Tones is actually an over 18, so I presume, like any a nightclub or what have you, I think we'd have to view it as a nightclub, you sort of a situation. You couldn't bring a younger person in accompanied by an adult, so unfortunately it seems that that younger person's going to miss out there. But we've been told officially that it is over 18. Hi, I stopped for a sit-in ice cream with children in a seaside town. What did they have? 2 small, 1 large. This is ice cream. There's a drizzle of chocolate and a few sweeties. 1 tea, no food. How much would you say ice cream with kids? 2 small, 1 large, drizzle of choc and few sweets. 1 tea, no food, €21. My, that seems quite expensive. Rip-off era is alive and well. It's one thing to have a tourist pay that. Locals won't forget that in a hurry. They then want us to shop local. I was and still am in shock. Seems a lot, thanks. It's a disgruntled customer who wishes to stay anonymous. 2 small ice creams, 1 large, a cup of tea, and a few, you know, a drizzle and some sweets on the top. €21. Big, big money. Well, wouldn't be me buying it for the kids, I'm afraid. Sorry, I'm too tight. Right, okay, that's where we're leaving on the show today. Don't forget, tomorrow it's our Friday show, which means we have a Friday panel joining us from 9 to 10 to discuss some of the big issues and topics of the day and of the week. We really appreciate your involvement in that as well, so please tune in for that. That's Entertainment returns tomorrow as well between 11 and 12, and we have a busy 10 to 11 hour as well. I can't reveal the figures because they're embargoed to 12, but we new listenership figures have come out and shows that more of you are listening to this show. So me and Caroline and Shannon as well, of course, really appreciate not only those of you who loyally listen to the show, but those of you that have found the show more recently as well. It's great to see more people listening, especially, as I say, in this day and age where media is changing and stuff. So you're still choosing us. It's greatly appreciated. We're back tomorrow at 9:00.